Hello, and thanks for listening to this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. Hello, and welcome to our regular listeners. Good to have you here again. Everything is pretty much where you left it last time, so it should be as comfortable and welcoming as you remember. Just remember to turn the lights off when you leave. And hello to all those listening for the first time. You're very welcome too. If there's something you need to share, get in touch. If you like what we do, don't like what we do, whatever, let us know. mark.ward@securityforum.org is the address for any comments, ideas, or requests. This episode of the podcast is about Threat Horizon. The new edition came out, I think, sort of a couple of weeks before this podcast is being released. The report is bigger and better than ever. And in this podcast, we want to talk about some of the changes we've made, those big themes that run through it, and you know how to use it as well. We will be exploring some of this in some webinars as well that you can find, obviously, on RSF Live. And we're taking Threat Horizon on tour, chapter meetings, various other places. You won't be able to escape it. My name is Mark Ward. I'm a senior research analyst, and I was one of the authors of Threat Horizon this year. I think it's my third time through it. You'd think I'd know better by now, but it seems I am a glutton for punishment. But yeah, it's good fun. It's good fun. I have enjoyed it. Also here is Richard Absalom, a principal analyst who's overseen many editions of the report. How many times have you been involved, Rich?
Yeah, hi, Mark. Way too many. Yes, I think you've done too many on three. And I was counting up this morning, and this was the eighth that I've either authored or, quality reviewed in some capacity. Yeah, I've been here too long.
Is there a bit of a Groundhog Day feel to that? It sort of can't escape it. Keeps coming back. Same thing again.
Yeah, it's my marker of another year. Another Threat Horizon. And
part of the furniture.
You're right. This one's bigger and better, certainly better than ever. I think we can be really happy with how we've improved in the last couple of years.
Definitely. Yeah, it's changed a lot. I will explore some of that today. Also here is Paul Watts, who's another TH veteran. Do you miss it, Paul? I know the last one was only a year or so ago. Were you involved?
So I was involved in Threat Horizon 2024, and you and I co-authored one. It's always great fun to do Threat Horizon because it requires you to think and feel very differently from some of the traditional research that we do. And I think, as a member, I go all the way back to Threat Horizons back in 2015, 2016 and beyond. Just the journey that we've been on has been quite incredible, and I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit later on. And it's good to see that Rich has finally stopped blubbing after the announcement about the sad untimely demise of his favorite football manager. But good to see you back without the running mascara for once, Rich.
We got over it. Jurgen Klopp is a legend forever, and I can't say he'll be back, unfortunately, but we'll keep going.
Yeah, that's one threat we did not predict.
It's meant to happen in 2 years' time. I mean, there's just no legislating for those kind of black swan events.
Absolutely. Yep, right out of the blue. There it was.
There's something to be said about that, isn't there? Yeah. I think we feel that very much in Threat Horizon now is expect the unexpected is absolutely a thing. And don't just take our word for it. Talk to our friend Uncle COVID. These things happen out the blue.
Yeah, there's a lot of other themes and events we explored this year that are intertwined. I mean, that's the subheading for the report, the era of entangled risks. And the problem is that, they do feed on each other, make them all the sort of bad stuff worse, potentially. But I think the other thing is just the other side of that is, just unexpected. You don't know what's going to happen. But before we continue, we need to acknowledge the contribution of Max Brook to this year's report. Max was very much the lead author and project manager for the report, shaped its current form and oversaw its genesis. Over the last couple of years, he and I worked very closely together to reshape it. Max has now moved on from the ISF to Aviva, another ISF member, and we wish him well. I'm sure he'll do very well there, and we will miss you, Max. So in the absence of Max, then, I'll turn to Rich. Rich, please, can you sum up the entire 100-page report in 30 seconds? Go.
Tricky. Read it. No, I think that's a difficult one to do.
It's not designed for that. Yeah,
it's not designed to be read cover to cover. The idea is to get ideas flowing. The idea of scenario planning is you don't know what's going to happen. You can't legislate for black swan events. We're kind of positioning it as obviously kind of three key themes covered, which we'll talk about. They're all intertwined. Each of those, again, has four scenarios based on different critical uncertainty. So things that we're just not sure how it's going to go over the next few years. So yeah, this is the key difference, you know, for people who have read Threat Horizon over the years. We're not telling you what's going to happen. We're not coming up with a list of 9 threats that we think will happen. We've come up with a list of 12 scenarios, any of which could happen. And within those scenarios, again, are multiple threats. So I can't remember the exact threat count in this year's report,
but it's a lot.
Something like it's closer to 80 than 9.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot of different things in there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a bigger report because it tries to take in more of the world, and acknowledging that the way we've structured it should make it easier to digest. So yeah, we're not expecting people to consume all of it, but there's some the way it's structured. There's some priority pages. You know, do these things first, because one of the things we did realize as we were exploring those scenarios and those threats started to surface was that there were some very common aspects to all of them. And that's, I think, hopefully going to be one of the more useful parts of it. I don't know, Paul, because that's quite a change from previous years, Paul. So, I mean, is that, I'm hoping that's a welcome change, but would you have liked that earlier? I don't know if consuming Threat Horizon earlier, did you have to do a lot of work yourself to turn it into something that was useful?
I kind of did. I remember the first time I took Threat Horizon into the boardroom, very, very excited. So we're going to have a talk about, you know, where we think the threat landscape is going as a future. And we talked about it and it was a really, really good conversation. And the CEO said, but what does all of this mean to us? And I realized my big mistake was that I hadn't really applied a good modicum of context. And although the conversation was a good conversation, it didn't really conclude with anything fixed and tangible for the organization. A mistake that I didn't repeat again. I welcome the return of what we used to fondly call the threat radar, which is kind of it's not the same as before, but it's reminiscent of before, where you've really got that good visualization of where everything is. And in terms of when you need to be worrying about it, I think it's important. The conversations that security leaders now have with their businesses are not just about the tactical stuff. You're also thinking about the long-term strategic things that might come over the hill that can have big influences on where you're trying to take your organization strategy, your security strategy. And I think it encourages that different line of thinking. And the other thing I would say, my favorite diagram in the whole paper is the diagram on page 8, which just shows this visualization. If you go back to earlier threat horizons, they're all kind of quite compartmentalized, you know. We do talk about similar things, but they're very defined. You know, we worry about mobile technology. We worry about the CEO still not getting it. Whereas this one, it's the perfect illustration of just how interconnected the world is now. That threat in the technology accelerates theme can be triggered by society dividing, can be triggered by deterioration in climate. And that interconnectivity and that visualization of that interconnectivity is a whole new dimension to Threat Horizon. And I think our members will get a lot from showing that bigger picture that these threats now can't be dealt with in isolation, that they do have levels, deep levels of interconnectivity. And you have to see that bigger picture with short, medium and long-term range. I'm really, really impressed with the way that certainly this paper looks and the journey that we've just been on with Threat Horizon. I think it's great.
Yeah, we should mention the three themes, which are technology accelerates, society divides, and climate changes. And I think that all of those, as you say, Paul, are, if you try to tackle one of them in isolation, you're going to make the others worse. I mean, that's another problem as well, just the sheer amount of changes, events, risks that organizations are going to have to deal with. And I think as well, like you say, we've tried to make it easier rather than just say, hey, do all this, because that would just be impossible for any organization. We've prioritized. And I think you've said a couple times, Rich, you know, the good thing is there's 3 pages you can look at, and that's the kind of in the report, and that's the guide to where you should go with it.
Yeah, I was going to say the overarching word we've used here is polycrisis, right? There's loads of things going on at once, hitting organizations all at the same time. And absolutely, we designed this for skim readers because we know, you know, who has time to sit and digest, you know, just read something 100 pages plus. So the idea is you can skim through and kind of very quickly see, okay, in this theme, in the technology accelerates theme, what are the 4 scenarios? And, you know, what are the threats? What are the threats that are most interesting to me now. So which ones are, you know, do we need to act upon right now versus which ones are more likely, or, you know, something to keep an eye on, but more of those kind of unexpected black swan events. And I think that's how we've managed to keep what we used to do with Threat Horizon, with what, you know, some of the feedback we got was we needed to be more based in the present. Whereas often in Threat Horizon, you know, we'd look at, okay, we'd try and really push the boundaries and kind of go out there and think, what's the worst thing that could happen? So you've got some quite apocalyptic scenarios, or quite apocalyptic threats about the very worst possible scenario. And we can keep those in here. That's what we can do with this version of Threat Horizon, but we can also dial it back and say, okay, but there's also some stuff that's really likely to happen quite soon. And the point is you need to prepare for it all.
We put some markers around those, and I think sort of one of the other things that's going to happen with Threat Horizon as well, it's going to be less a sort of annual event and more a, you know, continuous process that I'm going to be mainly involved with, sort of keeping an eye on those things. And certainly my priority list is, because the way we've stratified the threats in there is that some that you should act on immediately. We've got we've ranked them in four categories and act are the ones that should be your priorities. And also we've done a separate element of it, which is that those few things that, you know, if all else fails, then these are the things that you need to pay attention to. And one of those is being the crown jewels, because I was struck by a conversation I had with some folks, I think, doing one of the workshops at Congress, and they were exploring, I can't remember which scenario it was exactly, but I think the sort of technology accelerates combined with climate change or something like that, and just were getting rather worried about all the things it was going to do to their organization. But they said, well, if nothing else, then you'll realize really quickly what your crown jewels are and what you really need, what will keep your organization running. Hopefully that'll be useful. Keep an eye on those main threats. We'll plot how they start to change and how organizations might react and respond to them and do something about them as well. So I think, yeah, it's all about priorities, and hopefully that'll make it much more useful to the members, because we did get a little pushback last year on the way it was structured, mainly around scenarios. Kind of had to be, because that's the big change we made. But this year, yeah, it's all threats all the time, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I think that makes sense. You know, last year was a bit of a transition year, the way we always saw it. We were moving away, you know, completely changed the format, and it was I'm not going to say experimental, but we had to introduce the methodology to the membership. We had to say, this is, you know, what scenario planning looks like. We had to do a bit more work, I think, to take people along the journey to get to where, okay, and this is where the threats come in each scenario. Whereas now we've been able to, you know, focus very quickly on, okay, these are where the threats are, and kind of push the methodology and all the analysis we do around the PESL, you know, political, economic, social, technological, legal, environmental. It's that big picture of the world that really shapes what those scenarios look like. But we can, that analysis, you know, takes a long time. You know, some really hard thinking that you guys have done over that, and with members, of course, you know, through the workshops, during the preparation and the research. But in terms of how we present it, that's all pretty much been moved to the back, right? So you can talk, get more quickly to the point on, these are what the threats are going to be, this is what you need to prioritize. But yeah, if people want to use that thinking, that methodology, and go ahead and do their own scenario planning and think about what this means in the context of their own organization, absolutely use that methodology, and then also, you know, talk to us if we can help.
Yeah, we'd have to run people through it, because I think it is, for all its detail and huge amount of references and in there, then yeah, it's still written at a pretty high level. I think, Paul, what we have tried to do, having been involved with it a few times, it genuinely felt different this year, just in the way we wrote it and what emerged at the, you know, at the end of it. But I think it tries to be a better companion for what information security leaders and practitioners have become as well. It's much more about the business rather than InfoSec.
Yeah, I was going to tackle that, actually, and just play a bit of devil's advocacy here. I think, Rich, you make a really valid point that 2025 was very much putting the product into transition, just trying to take people on a bit of a journey. The work that I'm doing in the background, looking at leadership and strategy, we recognize that our relationship with the board and the business is changing. And what we also recognize is we have to look beyond the end of our noses in terms of, it's not just about risk and control now. We have to think about different factors, such as the need for businesses to be agile, for the businesses to ramp up and ramp down on cost controls and capital and operational expenditure. And all of these things are dynamics that change. And I guess my question is, we've always aspired to do more for the business when we write these reports. Do you think we're continuing on the right trajectory for that journey? So if I was a CEO and I happen to pick this paper up. Can I understand it? Can I glean something from this? Can I at least seed a conversation with my peer group, but then ultimately with my security leader and my risk team and my governance people to understand what we need to do about what the report is telling us? Or does it still need to be spoon-fed by risk practitioners?
Ooh, that's a good question. I certainly, in the language, we have tried to, as always, we try to be quite clear on what we're saying and, you know, avoid jargon. And the one thing we have done with the threats is list the other places in an organization that should be enrolled to help tackle that particular problem. And that seems, that's quite a change, because we've definitely, as a trade, woken up to the fact that, yeah, you know, it's too dangerous to go out there alone. you need help. I mean, some of that is just because a lot of businesses are based around technology, and that brings its own risk with it. But also just, you know, the way InfoSec is done, yeah, you can't do it in isolation anymore. So I think it's better at that. But I mean, it's a fair point that, sure, it's still not quite preaching to the converted, but certainly to the, you know, the people who've only just joined that church, perhaps. It tries to be much more general than it ever was, I think.
I think that there's two things. Yes, it's, you know, we are the Information Security Forum, right? Our key membership are people involved in InfoSec. So we push it towards that direction. Those are the threats we bring up. But to your point, yeah, we talk with some of these threats. The information security function is not going to be able to solve some of them, you know, in terms of we listed out which functions need to be involved to take action on this. Some of them just do not involve the InfoSec function. It's more of a marketing or a PR thing, or legal in some cases. But also from that, yeah, to answer Mark's initial words, Paul, your initial question, from, you know, whether a CEO could pick it up. I think what's really good about this is because the themes and the scenarios are so highly focused, you could take exactly the same scenarios and fill them out with any other number of risks, you know, from any other part of the business that affect any other part of the business. They don't necessarily need to be information security, information related risks. You can add in any number of risks and the scenario planner still works. So that's how this fits nicely into that overall scenario model that's fairly, you know, well understood and used by businesses. You could apply InfoSec threats and risks in the same kind of conversation as, you know, other risks that are going to be impacting the business.
I think just in terms of the way that that practitioners would approach Threat Horizon in the context of their own organizations, there is some sort of relationship to the underlying cultural maturity of the organization to embrace these sorts of conversations. So if you're in a very, frankly, very juvenile state of maturity where, you know, the business is seeing security as nothing more than a box ticking exercise, you're probably not even going to get access to the stakeholder groups you need to have this level of conversation, which means that it's very vested in the technology teams to do something useful with it in isolation. Now, we all know, and the reason why we've evolved this product in this way is that those conversations are very, very stilted if you behave in that capacity. Sometimes that's born out of necessity. Organizations that are a little bit more mature, you're actually looking for conversational gambits that are outside the traditions. So rather than going into the boardroom and saying, what are we going to do about these, you know, these areas of 27K1 that we're not quite compliant with, that we said we would get compliant with, is more a benign conversation rather than saying, look, we've got a 5-year strategic plan to increase our market capitalization, to do more mergers, acquisitions, divestment work, to do more this, more that. And these things potentially stand in our way, and we can help think about how we navigate our way around these potential threats. So ultimately, we are achieving that goal. Now, that is a very alluring conversational gambit in the boardroom, but it requires a little bit of preparatory work, which kind of comes back to what we say quite a lot now in a lot of our research, is context is very, very important. And those relationships and those underlying conversations are the catalyst to be able to take something like this into a room and give it real meaning, real substance, real gravitas. So there is a little bit of work that needs to be done by yourselves, dear members, dear listeners, that we can support you with. You know, our consultants can very much help you on those conversations, on those journeys. But some of the heavy lifting does have to be done by yourselves. We can't think for you at that molecular level. The context has to be brought by yourselves.
I think that's true. But equally, I think the fact that information security people are encountering these problems and can talk about them and are informed, I think that'll help as well. Because there is not quite an image problem for InfoSec, but, you know, I think a lot of organizations regard that particular unit function capability as, you know, not central is the wrong word, but sort of, you know, some slightly peripheral to that forward direction the organization's going in. So I think, I mean, and I know there are some, like say, it's very mature members, some large organizations who have got really good at this. And it's largely because that communication does happen within and without, meaning outside InfoSec and across a lot of those departmental borders. But yeah, but I think, I hope we have acknowledged the fact that InfoSec is changing, and that, you know, we're trying to give them tools to do it a different way kind of thing as well, and just have those conversations.
I think, you know, another way of looking at this actually is this gives the security practitioners, the security leaders in organizations, the opportunity to demonstrate real business credibility, because what this allows you to do is synthesize a conversation that says, look, I might just be that individual to the side that's banging on about risk and compliance and controls and SOCs and all of that wonderful stuff, but actually I'm seeing the bigger picture, and I can bring more to the party, more to the table if you'll allow me to, because these scenarios allow us to explore the business of what if and what does that mean and where do we go next, and it just gives us that opportunity to do something that we've really struggled to do historically, which is demonstrate that we have a value and a purpose that transcends just the technology facets of information and cybersecurity. We can talk about the influences on people. We can talk about the influences on process. It's why we were very keen to retain the pestle analysis, which you will find towards the end of the report, because that's kind of the basis of everything that we put on top, that stratification of the report. You know, it's based on a fundamental understanding of the world and the society around us through those different dimensions. And then we build on it and we build on it and we build on it. And you then take that report into your organizations, apply localized context, and now you've got something you can really talk about. So it can be used as a tool to build credibility. So, you know, see it selfishly through that lens as well.
Yeah, I think that's very true. But I also, this year more than ever, I think we have talked to more people than ever before. I think some of the earlier Threat Horizons did a lot more workshops, and they were smaller, and the ISF was smaller, et cetera. So there was, you know, potentially a bit more contact there, but it kind of felt like it fell away a bit because of COVID and the pandemic. It was hard to reach out and do some of those things. But it reflects more than ever the types of things that that practitioners, members are bumping into, which I think is good. So, you know, it's very current in that respect. So it should resonate with a lot of people, say, oh yeah, I've got that problem, or oh yeah, that's important to me. But I think, I think that gives it more credibility, a lot of credibility as well. So hopefully it will be useful for those broad conversations.
You know, I think just to add to that, I think we can do more with what members have told us, you know, bearing in mind the format change. You know, it used to be that we had to narrow down to 9 threats. We discarded quite a lot of good ideas. Now, because we can present multiple threats in different scenarios happening at, you know, the same time, one might happen, one might not, we're actually able to use more of what members tell us, you know, some of the ideas that they'll come up with and that we and various other experts come up with, so we can present a much bigger picture view of, yeah, these are the things that might happen. You know, you need to prepare for anything.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, we have taken a bigger bite of the world out there. I know, and it has to be said, I think you were a CISO back in 2008 with the financial crisis. So yeah, having looked at a lot of news lately, in fact, it got so bad at one point, not bad, that's the wrong word, but I was so tired of news at one point, I genuinely turned it off when it came on the radio or on the TV. I left the room because I'd had enough of bad news. But I don't know, 2008, was that a particularly bad time for, not InfoSec, but just the world in general and just coping with that? Do you see it going the same kind of way?
It was, so in 2008, I was the CISO in an organization that was heavily invested in retail banking. So I worked across all of the big UK banks, and we were all quivering, hiding under the tables, trying to work out what on earth was happening. We were watching runs on banks. It was unprecedented. And I think the thing I take away from that and is carried throughout, you know, my career beyond 2008 is this existential threat happening to something that was so big that it was almost untouchable, actually happened to something that was that big and was absolutely touchable. And I think it was the first time in my career where I realized, Obviously, you can go back to the kind of MCI Welcome Enron days and, you know, back at 2000. But that was the first time when it was on my watch and I had a degree of accountability that I realized that, you know, these black swan events were absolutely a thing. And that's kind of carried me through. The other thing I'd say is going back to something Rich said, I think that's quite an interesting point as well. One of the things I remember vividly when I joined the ISF as a member of staff rather than as a member was the structure and the approach we took to Threat Horizon was actually very constraining. Yeah, we talked about a threat that was really, you know, relevant and oh, we can't do that because we've done it before. Or it had to fit into the 3x3 model for Threat Horizon. What we've now allowed ourselves to do is recognize that because all these threats are intertwined, because threats do morph and evolve and then circle back round and manifest and wear slightly different hats, that, you know, these things do go around the block. And I think we're going to see that really brought into sharp focus when we move into continuous delivery. So the idea is rather than produce one a year, we're continually evolving and reporting on the threat landscape, and you'll see how these things ebb and flow. I think the reality is the world more interconnected and intertwined than ever before. And that means that we've had to be less structured with the way that we've done Threat Horizon and allow ourselves to revisit. And that revisitation is important because, you know, these things do come around again and again and again, wearing different hats.
And most importantly,
thanks for triggering me about 2008. Yeah, fond memories of that.
I was going to say, most importantly there, thanks, Paul, you've got back in your good books, so not having to tell you that we've done that before anymore.
Yeah,
I think I was the as the person who's been involved in eight, I was the prime culprit for going, yeah, I remember that one, now we can't do it because we've already covered that threat and someone will notice.
But it was always because we felt compelled to do something different, but that's not the way the world works now.
Absolutely.
No, that's very true. Yeah. But I think that sometimes we did just use them as a way to explore a potential problem. Equally, there were some times when we got quite a bit of pushback on some of the more out there threats, shall we say. When people going, are they really going to do that? Are they really? And you know, we had the references and we had good reasons for thinking that. But it had to be said that sometimes, and we marked our own homework, we tried to work out if we were right or wrong, and sometimes we weren't. But not necessarily because that threat was completely out there and just wasn't going to happen, but just because the world went in a slightly different way. And I think it's that unpredictability. We're going to, you know, if anything's going to happen the next few years, we just don't know. Grey rhinos, black swans? I think we just don't know. And in terms of priorities, yeah, resilience is going to be one for organizations. Just make sure that you can cope with whatever comes your way, one way or another.
Our motivation was always the same. It was to push the boundary, make you think a bit differently. Think about what could happen.
Yeah.
We've allowed ourselves to do that a bit better now in a better format. Mm-hmm. Essentially, we've taken the same motivation. We want people to, you know, Threat Horizon, from my point of view, has always been about starting conversations, not finishing them. Yeah, we want people to take these things as ideas, not just guarantee, the ISF says this is going to happen, it must happen. You know, if we had crystal balls, we wouldn't be doing this job, right? We'd be playing the stock markets and causing another meltdown like 2008.
Yeah, or building a bunker, perhaps. Maybe that's what we're going to be doing.
I think you're bang on there. If I was going to give any member a piece of advice in using this new Threat Horizon, it's open your mind. I remember Max and myself, we were out in Frankfurt with our colleagues out there, and we tried a little bit of an experiment. So one of our favorite threat topics that keeps on hitting the cutting room floor is space. But it's a great example of just how interconnected the world is, and actually the things that you don't think you need to worry about, you do need to worry about. So we said to everybody, who here's worried about space? And they all looked at us and went, eh. And then we said, who's worried about space debris? And everybody again went, well, I watched the film Gravity. Does that count? No. Who here is involved in logistics? And like, you know, all the hands went on. And we said, how do you plan and organize your logistics operations? They said, oh, we use GPS. We've got all that. And I said, oh, interesting. Where's the GPS infrastructure? They said, oh, it's up in space. Oh.
Okay.
And then suddenly these heads are going, so we do need to worry about this, because if we lose GPS, half of our drivers can't read maps anymore, and our logistics goes to pot, and the financial impact of that. And suddenly all these minds were going into overdrive going, never even thought about it like that. Open your mind, and you'd be surprised what you find when you think more out of the box with Threat Horizon. And that, I guess, that's my favorite bit about working with Threat Horizon, is some of the conversations that we've had as a team, just kicking some of these things around. I mean, this is the fun part of the job, like, opportunities to be creative on it.
Yeah. What did I see this morning? The EU is convening some meetings about GPS interference and jamming, because it's starting to become a big problem. There's a particular place in the world, no prize of guessing where, but I imagine they will grow because conflict is breaking out in all kinds of places. And you just sort of think, because GPS jamming is absolutely key to any military operation. And plus just surveillance all those kinds of things as well. So, I would imagine that's just going to get worse and worse and worse. But I just thinking, is there any good news out there? Because it's not at least a depressing report as such, because it's, does try to encourage organizations to do good things that help protect them. And also there are some opportunities in there we could probably dig out. But I don't know, is it 2024 bad year for everybody?
We're pessimists by nature, right? Because I think you kind of have to be in the information security industry, where I've learned to be, because you're trying to pick holes with anything that could happen. So yes, we are pointing out the risks. However, again, when you think about scenarios, we always think, if there's a four scenarios in any one theme, we'd always call one or say that one is more or less optimal, depending on the critical uncertainties, things can go better or worse. But the funny thing we find is, yes, there are obviously opportunities in all these scenarios, and there's all, change is always an opportunity for some. So some businesses will do well and some won't. But the funny thing I think we found working on Threat Horizon is that in all the scenarios that we thought these look optimal, actually we found some really interesting threats in there. They're still threats, they're just different to the others. Yep. So they're not necessarily optimal for the InfoSec team. But for a business or an environment or a global point of view, some of these scenarios are better than others. That's probably a world that you'd prefer to live in
than others. We don't use that difficult word predictable anymore or prediction anymore. We don't try and say this is the way the world will go. These are plausible, possible places that we could end up living. But no matter what happens, hopefully Threat Horizon will, the way it's architected this year and how we improve it, change it over the next few years, will become more useful and more of that toolbox you can dip into as well.
I suppose the other thing to mention as well is there's a little bit of a sales pitch kind of sat around this. So if you're kind of struggling to think about how we get in and have these conversations in the first place, what we've gifted with this change in Threat Horizon is a massive opportunity. Look at it this way. Industry organizations, we operate, it's more agile and more challenging than it's ever been to retain that market share, to be ahead of your competition, and to find that edge. That edge isn't just about new innovations in products. It's about being resilient. It's about being able to roll with a punch that's going to come at you from left field, from someone you weren't expecting it to come from, and to anticipate it and predict it and roll with that punch, because you are going to get punched. Right, it's not about not getting punched anymore. It's going to happen. But it's about dealing with it swiftly. And think about it in this way. If you're having these conversations with your business and you're thinking about how you're going to roll with those punches and get back up on your feet and move forward more quickly than your competition, when they are hit with that next existential event, when they are hit by something that we have predicted and we have discussed in Threat Horizon, and you have a plan and you bounce back quicker, you've got days, weeks, maybe even months head start on your competitors who are going to have to think in real time about this stuff. Now, if that's not worth a conversation in the boardroom, I don't know what is. So there's your pool watch USP little sales pitch as to why a conversation about scenarios and strategic threat planning is important to your organization. You can have that for free.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul. So, final question about the way the world's going. Are we glass half full or half empty type people?
Half empty. Look, my glass is half empty.
what about quarter full?
I'm neither full nor empty. But somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, or if you're a kind of fluid dynamicist, you would say, it's the glass is full because air is a liquid, effectively.
Yeah, I think we're generally talking by 2026, though, that we talk about the poly crisis. We see lots of stuff happening all at once, and it's difficult to deal with. So I think, unfortunately, we're generally not too optimistic about the way the world is going on for the next few years. Maybe we need to see some therapists or psychologists about that to tell us to pick out the better things in life.
Well, if anything comes out of this report, it's that, yeah, it's dangerous out there. Don't go alone. You'll need some help. And yeah, hopefully Threat Horizon will give you some guidance as to who you should be talking to and the plans you should draw up. But thank you to Paul. Thank you to Richard. And thank you for listening. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues. You can now find ISF podcasts on all major podcast platforms. Look for our page on Audioboom where you can subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. The podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can learn much more about ISF research tools and guidance.